It is, in fact, a stage where one goes to the Hall of Memories and consults the Akashic record that one may see what one has accomplished during the last life on Earth, and what has been left undone. It is here that one is able to consult with those of great experience, so that one may plan one's next incarnation to remedy the defects of the last and to make a step farther in overcoming one's karma. Brahma Sutras, all these words come from India, and the Brahma Sutras are very famous aphorisms which place before one the principal teachings of the Upanishads. The Upanishads will be dealt with under U and under V. It is a sad fact that every translator and commentator, particularly in the Western world, injects his own opinions into his translations and commentaries. People are not content to merely translate. Thus it is that in the Brahma Sutras one translation may not agree with another, and unless one can see the original by way of the Akashic record one can be led sadly astray. Breath, one should also give it the name of pranayama, but as this would mean nothing to the majority of people, let us be content with the word breath. There is a special supplement at the end of this dictionary dealing with various systems of breathing, dealing with various exercises in the matter of breathing, so let us now state that breathing relates to the rhythm in which we take in air, hold it, and release it. As an instance, let us take one's own unit of time, and then have 1 unit of time for breathing in, 4 units of that time for retaining the breath, and 2 units of that time for exhaling. That is a comfortable breathing rhythm for inducing calmness. As the unit of time, one might take 3 seconds, so that we breathe in for 3 seconds, hold one's breath for 3 times 4, that is, 12 seconds, and exhale for 3 times 2, that is, 6 seconds. It is strongly advised that you do not practice different systems of yogic breathing until you know what you are doing, because until you have definite knowledge of what you are trying and why and what the results may be, you can endanger your health. The exercises given at the end of this dictionary are quite harmless, and are, in fact, really helpful. Buddha, this is not a god, this is a person who has successfully completed the lives of a cycle of existence, and by his success in overcoming karma is now ready to move on to another plane of existence. A Buddha is a person who is free from the bonds of the flesh. The one who is frequently referred to as the Buddha was actually Siddhartha Gautama. He was a prince who lived some 2,500 years ago in India. He renounced all material possessions in order to find enlightenment. He found nirvana, which does not mean, as it is usually translated, everything full of nothingness. We shall deal with nirvana under the letter N. Every one of us should strive to attain to Buddhahood, which is a state of being, an exalted state of being. It is not a god. Western people are often puzzled by the 1,000 Buddhas. They think that there are at least 1,000 gods, which, of course, is too fantastic to be even ridiculous. Buddhahood is a state of being. One can attain Buddhahood no matter what one's station in life. The prince or the garbage collector can each be pure and holy. Down on this earth we are like actors on a stage, and we take the dress or status which will be of most assistance to us in learning that which we have to learn. The 1,000 Buddhas, then, is merely an indication that one can attain to Buddhahood in 1,000 or so different ways. Why 1,000? Well, think of a small boy who says, "My father?" Ah! He's got millions of them. The 1,000, then, is merely a figure of speech. Buddha is a symbol, not the graven image of a god. The Buddha figures are just reminders of what we can be if we want to be, and if we work to be. Buddhi, a word meaning wisdom, and we must always keep before us the awareness that wisdom and knowledge are quite different things. Wisdom comes with experience, knowledge can be obtained without the wisdom to apply that knowledge which we have gained. We have to attain to Buddhi, which is wisdom, before we can pass on to Buddhahood, which is wisdom and knowledge. Buddhism. Frequently people refer to Buddhism as a religion. Actually, it would be far more correct to say it is a way of life, a code of living, a manner of passing our time upon this earth, so that we shall hurt none and advance our own spiritual progress in the quickest time with the least effort. Here are various things which one must do, and various things which one must not do. The Buddhists refer to them as the Four Noble Truths. 1. There is suffering and there is a cause for that suffering. Suffering can be overcome, and then there is a way of peace. 2. Nirvana. Mind and matter are in a state of constant change. The mind causes the spirit to bog down as if stuck in clay. Withdraw the mind, and then one attains to nirvana and so becomes free from suffering and the cycle of continual rebirth, living, dying, and being reborn. 3. The Eightfold Path, which means correct views, correct aspirations, correct speech, correct conduct, correct methods of livelihood, correct effort, correct thoughts, correct contemplation. As in most religions, or ways of life, there are different branches. Just as the Christian religion has a whole horde of different branches from the Plymouth Brethren to the Roman Catholic faith, so does the Buddhist school branch into two. They are the Hinayana, which means the narrow way, and the Mahayana, which means the great way. The former is rather austere, it has a narrow outlook, it relates to the achievement of personal sanctity through seclusion and asceticism. This is indeed a rigorous living. The latter, Mahayana, prefers to follow the precepts of Gautama Buddha as a divine incarnation. One might say that one of these calls upon a person to progress by his own efforts, while the other says that you can only work and progress by following the precise and undeviating example of another. See, causal body. For those who love big words, this is the Anandamaya Kosha, or, if you prefer it under yet a different language instead of in simple, plain language, you could term it the Karana Sharira. The causal body is the first of the various bodies with which we are encumbered. Think of us as being a nest of boxes, one inside the other, or think of us as anything which fits one inside the other. It could be a collection of those small coffee tables, or boxes, or a nest of drawers, anything which has a small subject, then a larger outside and a larger outside that, and so on. This is how our different bodies are arranged. The causal body is the innermost one, and it is that which commences the processes whereby we gain experiences in the flesh. This, the causal body, is the body of incarnation, and it is the one which causes all those familiar troubles associated with the flesh, lusts of various kinds, numerous exciting desires, horrible greed, and, the most common of all, selfishness. We have to live so that there is no need for us to have a causal body, because when we can manage without a causal body, we do not have to come back to this earth nor go to other material and unpleasant worlds. Chaitanya, a state when the spiritual consciousness has just been awakened, and one is alert and ready to progress upwards, taking the first steps to leave the causal body behind one. To attain to Chaitanya means hard work, hard study, constant meditation and contemplation. When the conditions are right, the six chakras are stimulated and come into consciousness, giving one awareness of one's destiny, giving an understanding of what must be before one can progress speedily. Chakras, we should concentrate upon the six chakras. Along our spine, like wheels threaded along our spinal column, are the six main chakras or centers of psychic consciousness. There are various centers which keep our causal body in touch with our higher bodies, in touch with our higher centers. Some people prefer to call these chakras lotuses. Others call them wheels. Some religions make a stylized symbol which one can recognize as a wheel or as a lotus, depending upon one's poetic imagination. There are six chakras along the spine, and a seventh in the center of the cerebrum. There are two others making nine in all. But most people have not attained to the state yet where they can assimilate knowledge of nine, so let us deal only with the orthodox and commonly accepted seven. When one can see the aura, one can see all the colors swirling out from these different chakras, and, of course, the colors and the aura emanations of all types are different between man and woman. The first chakra is at the base of the spine near the excretory organ. The second is at the genitalia level. The third is at the umbilicus. The fourth approximates to the level of the heart. The fifth comes at the level of the throat, and the sixth is at the eyebrow level. Mythology states that the lower man dwells in the lowest part of the spine, and not until man is able to raise the kundalini powers into the heart chakra is he able to be aware of progress. Man has to send his spiritual forces into the sixth chakra before being able to make any really satisfactory progress. And when one can get above the seventh, then one knows quite surely that one is living on earth for the last time. Chan, this now means meditation. It is a word used by the Japanese Zen Buddhists. Originally the word was chana, and it then signified that the person concerned had experienced instantaneous perception of truth. You might say that the person who had chana had experienced a revelation. Chang. The opposite of artificial, the opposite of abnormal. That which is completely normal, completely standard. It is a word from the Chinese Taoist belief. Chanism, a theory whereby one can attain to the state of Buddhahood through sudden enlightenment, through a sudden lightning flash of revelation. Devotees of Chanism engage in constant meditation upon the principles and precepts of the eternal truths in the hope of receiving this sudden revelation. Charms. Many people look upon charms as idle superstitions. They look upon charms as little ornaments which the gullible buy in the hope of changing their luck. Well, if you go to some souvenir shop and buy a charm, it is just the same as throwing your money away. But if you have a specially prepared charm, prepared, that is, by a person who knows how to do it, the charm is effective. It means that one has to build a thought form and locate it in the charm in much the same way as the Egyptians of old safeguarded their embalmed pharaohs. We shall deal with this more under talismans. Cheng, the honesty and sincerity inherent in one's true self. One has to allow Cheng to grow and to reveal itself before one can make any substantial progress. If we cut away greed, lust, and selfishness like taking away the hard shell from a nut, we can get to the kernel inside. Humans are encased in a hard shell, and they have to shed that shell before they can progress. CHI, this is vital force. Anything which comes within the sphere of matter. So we have Chi, the breath force which corresponds on the lowest plane with the etheric force, and then, higher, with the auric force. Chit, consciousness. A rather empty sort of consciousness. It is a lack of any specific awareness. One might say that it is being conscious without having any specific purpose to that consciousness, without learning anything through that consciousness. Chitta, this is the lower mind. There are three parts of the mind, or it might be better to say mind stuff. The first is manas, the second is buddhi, and the third is ahamkara. The first, of course, is the lowest. Everything which comes into the lower mind passes into the subconscious for storage and sorting, and possibly for later use. It should be remembered that within our subconscious we have the knowledge of all humanity, but through imperfections we have very imperfect memories, that is, we cannot get down to all the knowledge we have. Choice. It is unfortunate that in this world people try to influence others. Christians, for example, try to influence non-Christians to change religions or change beliefs. It seems that a person of a certain belief is not at all sure of his beliefs, and so he must try to persuade others to the same belief in the hope that it will mean that in numbers there is safety. It is wrong to influence one's free choice of the path of life and spirituality. If a person is always wanting proof, then that person should be let be. It means that the person is not ready to take a particular path. To compel a person to take a certain path against his or her will is useless. It merely adds to the karma of the person compelling and does no good to anyone. So, all you who are do-gooders, remember that in trying to influence the path of another, or in trying to compel conversion, you are harming yourself. City of Nine Gates. Many occult or metaphysical books refer to the City of Nine Gates. It is a device to thwart those who try to scan through occult literature without having a genuine interest, without having a genuine knowledge of the subject. It is a device to blind the superficial, the unevolved, and the merely curious. The City of Nine Gates, of course, is the physical body which has nine main openings, to eyes, to ears, to nostrils, etc. The other openings need not be detailed, as you should know them. Through each of the nine gates can come enemies which will stultify one's progress. For example, a very good man can be tempted by the enemy entering through his eyes. He may see some sight which stimulates his wrong desires, desires which he thought he had overcome. He might find the enemy entering through his nostrils, so that there would be scents which would unduly disturb his greed senses. It must be stated, however, that it is also possible to progress very satisfactorily through the use instead of the misuse of the nine gates. Clairvoyance. True clairvoyance means that one's astral body can get out of the physical body, and can then see in dimensions which cannot be contacted while in the physical body. The average person can see physically only those things which are within the range of his eyesight. He may look about a room and see a chair, a table, and a wall, but that which is in the room beyond is also beyond his sight. In clairvoyance one can see through the wall as if there were no wall, or as if, in those of lesser ability, a vague grey mist was there instead. When one gets into the astral stage one can consult the Akashic record and see any incident which has happened, or any incident which is happening. One can also see the probabilities for the future, that is, one can see that a person is going to have good fortune or bad fortune. Clairvoyance can be developed, it is the right of men and women, and before men and women became so selfish and used powers for their own gain everyone was clairvoyant. Concentration. This is the art of devoting one's full attention to one thing, it may be a physical thing or an intangible thing, such as an idea. One should concentrate along certain fixed rules, which means that one's attention should be focused strongly upon the object on which one desires to concentrate. As an illustration, consider a candle. Have a lighted candle before you, sit in any position which is comfortable, and think about that candle. Think about it as you gaze vaguely in its direction but without actually seeing the candle. What does the candle look like? Is there any smell to it? How was it made? What is the nature of the flame? How is the flame sustained? And if the candle is burning, and matter is stated to be indestructible, what happens to the candle when it is going up in flames? If you think upon these lines you can greatly develop your powers of concentration. In Tibet a monk will concentrate with a burning stick of incense upon his head. He has to maintain his concentration even when the burning incense starts to scorch the skin of his shaven skull. A monk in attendance will, of course, remove the incense before any harm is done. But the student monk must not remove it. If he does, it shows that his concentration is not sufficient. Contemplation. Contemplation often takes over when meditation ends. One may be meditating upon a certain subject and then one may find that one has come to the end of the information concerning the matter upon which one was meditating. Then contemplation takes over. One can contemplate upon the beauty of the setting sun, or one can contemplate upon the reason for the particular or peculiar action of a person. Contemplation is basically of two types. 1. Cognitive, in which a material object or matter is thought about. Or, 2. Non-cognitive, in which one dwells upon things of the spirit, things beyond man's material perception, but one has to be particularly evolved, particularly spiritually mature, before one can engage in non-cognitive contemplation. Cult. Often a person of little knowledge, or of poor spiritual perception will imagine that he or she is a great teacher, and will then by propaganda get a small group of people to whom he or she will expound the great truth which has been received by this method or that method, or direct voice, or automatic writing, or something else. It is tragic that often these groups distort the great truths. They merely exist to pander to the exalted ideas of some person who has barely started on the path. One should only enter a group or cult when one is quite sure that one is doing right. There are enough orthodox religions, Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, or whatever you like, without all these subsidiary cults springing up. All too often a cult is started as a money-making device preying upon the gullible. While one must agree that a teacher needs to have money that food and clothing may be bought, yet when the teacher uses his or her name as a basis for getting members, or when he or she stresses that the teacher is the important thing, you may be sure that there is something wrong. The name of a teacher does not matter. All that matters is what the teacher teaches. Is it good? Does it satisfy your needs? Does it require that you pay large sums of money before you go on to the next meeting or the next lesson? If so, be careful. It may be a money-making racket. If you are in doubt, why not see a priest of the religion to which you were born? If you are sufficiently determined, you can see a higher priest of the religion to which you were born. But it is desired here to issue a solemn warning against cults which purport to teach all sorts of magic, purport to give all sorts of demonstrations, but only if you pay enough. Remember, it may be your mental health which suffers. D. Dhamma. This is a word which relates to the quieting of the 10 organs of sense and action, for it is obvious that until one can quieten one's sense and action perceptions, one cannot adequately meditate or contemplate. Attaining to Dhamma is one of the 6 attainments, and that will be referred to under the letter S. Death. This, in the occult sense, is the severing of the silver cord, which parts the astral body or soul from the physical body. There is nothing to be afraid of in death, because death is as natural as birth. Death, in fact, is the process of being reborn into another plane of existence. It is a provision of nature that people normally are afraid to die. There is an ingrained racial fear of death, and that is necessary because if people knew how simple dying really is, there would be more suicides. And that would be a bad thing, because as soon as a suicide gets to the other side of death, the poor fellow gets shoved back into another body, as a baby, of course, and then he has to live for his allotted span. Every person coming to earth has his days numbered, that is, his time of birth is known and his time of death is known. Thus, if a person commits suicide, he gets put into the body of a baby and is sent back to earth, and if he only had a few months to live, then he might be born again stillborn. If he had 2 or 3 years to live, then the baby would die at 2 or 3 years. Death is a good thing. It would be intolerable to think that one lived on this benighted earth for eternity. Death is release from the toils of earth. It enables one to evolve and to educate our over-self. Deha, this actually means one who has a body. Man has 3 basic bodies, the dense, the subtle or not so dense, and the causal, but we will deal with that more extensively under the letter U. The body is the means whereby the immortal soul or over-self can gain experience from a physical life. The body is merely an instrument or puppet. You may like to read more about this under the letter P, planes of existence. Deity, scriptures of all kinds state thou shalt not worship graven images. But to have a picture or an image of some sacred, revered figure, is not necessarily to worship a graven image. The image reminds one of that which one can become provided one tries hard enough. Similarly, a sacred picture or a sacred image to which one is attached can act as a very sound point of focus when one engages in meditation or contemplation. That is why some people have a personal shrine at home with perhaps a photograph or an image or some picture. It acts as a soothing influence which puts one into the right frame of mind. One can train one's mind to think of the sacred object to the exclusion of more mundane articles. Sacred pictures or sacred images are acceptable and permissible provided they are used as reminders and not as objects of senseless worship. It must be pointed out that Christians use a crucifix not necessarily as an object of worship, but as an object of reminding. Deva, a deva is a divine being, one who is quite beyond the human state. Anyone who has attained to the necessary degree of enlightenment and purity, and is no longer on this earth, could be a deva. Nature spirits and man-made thought forms are not, and cannot ever be devas of the human type. Although naturally nature spirits and animal spirits have their own group devas. Devils, these people are the negative of the positive of good. It follows that if there were no devils, there would be no gods. If we have a positive, we must have a negative, otherwise the positive could not exist. If you have a battery, you cannot have just a positive terminal because no current would flow. You must have a negative terminal as well in order to complete the circuit. Devils are necessary and they do quite a lot of good. They remind one that it is much better to be on the side of good than fall into the clutches of devils, who are alleged to be quite unkind. Actually, there is a very real force of evil. Evil is a thing like trying to climb up some very, very steep hill in a car. The hill is so steep that you have to be in bottom gear all the time, and you are afraid that your engine is going to stop and your brakes won't hold, and so back you will go. However, that is a personal thought. Let it be stated as a fact that evil and devils are necessary because otherwise there would be no incentive to good. There would, in fact, be no yardstick by which we could measure good. Dana Reisner, some people for peculiar reasons of their own seem to like to try different postures. Although I have never seen the slightest use of these, here is one which you may want to try if you feel you should do a doctor or chiropractor a good turn. Make sure that you or your relatives know his telephone number before you start. This Dana Reisner is a yogic posture sometimes termed the bow posture. If you really want to try it, lie on the ground with your face down, bring your legs backwards towards your neck so that your hands can catch hold of your ankles. Then pull yourself together so that your head and chest are off the ground. Pull harder so that your legs and most of your thighs also are off the ground. Then you are teetering rather absurdly on a somewhat vulnerable part of your anatomy. Try this a few times, and afterwards try to decide what is the sense of it. It should be observed here that one can be good, one can be very good, without all these gymnastic contortions which are merely an exhibitionist stunt. Dharma, this word can indicate merit, good morals, righteousness, truth, or a way of life. Its true meaning, however, is that which holds your true nature. It means that one should take a way of life and maintain that way of life, without slipping back from the high standards which one has previously set oneself. In Buddhism, Dharma means following the Noble Eightfold Path. Dhatis. This is a word meaning cleansing. For a Western person it is a very dangerous process indeed, and should never, never, never be carried out except under the closest supervision of one who has been trained to a very high standard and knows the harm that can be caused if it is done carelessly. Dhatis is a system of purification of the physical body, and does not confer any psychic abilities. Certain people in India swallow air and expel it forcibly in various unusual ways. Afterwards, they swallow water and expel it in the same unusual ways. Some of the practitioners of this in India swallow a strip of cloth, securely holding one end, of course. They swallow the other end of the cloth until a very considerable length is in the stomach. Then they rub and pound the stomach, afterwards pulling out the cloth, to which adhere all sorts of things from the stomach and throat. Another stage is when the person passes a thread through the nostrils and brings it out through the mouth. The thread is pulled backwards and forwards in much the same way as one would clean a chimney. This should be left well alone, and it is mentioned here so that you have been warned to leave it well alone. Dhyana, this is a meditation or a deep form of concentration. It is an unbroken flow of thought towards that upon which one concentrates. It is a word which in Raja Yoga is known as the seventh of the eight limbs. Diet. Diet usually relates to food, although there is such a thing as a spiritual diet. But using this to refer to food, it may be stated that many people have all sorts of weird ideas about diet. Some are strictly vegetarian, some eat meat. My own view is that at the present stage man is a meat-eating animal, so if you feel the need for meat, eat meat. One should not overeat, one should eat in order to live, and not live in order to eat. If one is doing occult study, garlic and anything bitter or acid should be avoided. Diet is just a common sense approach to what one should eat. Do not eat too much. Do not drink anything intoxicating, because to do so is to desecrate the temple of the soul and to drive the astral body out of the physical body. Unfortunately, the stage into which the astral body is driven is known as the lower astral, which can be decidedly unpleasant. Many people are fervent vegetarians. They will not eat meat because they think that some animal has to be killed. Well, why will these people cure an illness?